Well, I went link crazy on the blogs tonight, and I put up two of them. So if you want to, link up there at coasttocoastam.com. Other great stories, including that story that I mentioned in one of the previous callers about sleep paralysis as it helps explains as it helps to explain ghost stories, except that what we've already heard are the number of occurrences that happen with people who are fully wide awake, not anywhere near either going into or coming out of a dream state. So that's what, you know, an expert is saying to try to dismiss the story which you experienced. So let's just put that in a little box over there to say, okay, maybe for a percentage of ghostly experiences, there is some sort of scientific explanation. But what happened to you? We'll find out next on Ghost to Ghost AM. This is Ian Punnett. Let's get back started going ghost to ghost with Dean on a wild card line in Tampa. Go ahead, Dean.
Yes, sir. Good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Happy Halloween, Dean.
Happy Halloween, sir. In fact, I'm getting chills as I'm on hold thinking about the story back in the summer of 85.
We're doing something right if your own story is scaring you, so we're off to a good start.
It is. In fact, it's very surreal, sir. In fact, as I'm thinking about it, on the whole part of it, I'm definitely experiencing some interesting emotions. But getting to the point of the story, sir, I just moved down to Grapevine, Texas. I had just gotten my driver's license, and a friend of mine who had moved from Alaska was in Fort Worth, so I decided to take a little road trip one Saturday evening. And my mom had gone out of town, so I was able to borrow her brand-new car since I had not driven long enough to get my own car. So I'm in my mom's car. I drive to Fort Worth. I'm at this friend of mine's house, and this party next door spills over. So being neighborly, we all decided to kind of, you know, partake in what they were doing. And from just about talking to people, I suddenly came upon a lady by the name of Clarity. And I found her very fascinating. And it was just that the one thing I noticed, though, is we had just gotten to the party, and she was very insistent on leaving. And I just met her. She seemed like a really great girl. And yet, you know, it's like one of those fleeting moments where you're thinking, you just had the door open, but yet now she's closing the door. And then she tells me she'd been abandoned by her friends and she needed a ride home. So, well, Mama raised me right, so I decided to be chivalrous. And, you know, and at this point, I'm 18. I'd never been with a woman in my life. So I'm thinking, any girl that's willing to get in my car, I'm willing to drive you to China if you need me. So I said, no problem. She goes, well, I live in Denton, Texas, which is just north of Grapevine. So we're on the highway, sir, and I've just been driving for a few weeks now, and I'm really not sure where I'm going, but I'm following her direction. And, sir, the most amazing thing happened. I realized that all the city lights of the Fort Worth and the Metroplex had dissipated as our conversation had become very engrossing. The greatest hits of the Eagles are playing on the tape deck. And as the Long Way Home song is playing, I suddenly realized that I'm not seeing signs for anything relating to Dallas and Fort Worth. And there is no turnoffs. There is no nothing. And it was so surreal because it felt like one of those kind of Quentin Tarantino movies where it's like kind of smoke going by. There's no exits. There's no nothing. You're just trapped in this. It's like a lost highway. And I remember at one point I'm getting really nervous because I'm thinking I have no idea where I'm going. And suddenly I see a sign that says Oklahoma, 35 miles. And I'm going, that can't be good. So she goes, oh, hold on. She goes, take a right. So I'm thinking, oh, thank God Almighty, she knows where she's going. So we're suddenly in Denton, Texas. I'm happy. I'm awake. I'm good. I'm ready to drop her off. She goes, well, let's just make one stop. I'm like, okay. At this point, I'm still pretty gullible. So we go to an apartment complex, and there's a hill right by the parking lot. And she goes, well, we just need to go over the hill, and I want to show you something. I mean, she's very, she's very persistent. It's just all about. I felt like she was on a mission.
Okay.
So I decided to go with her. So we go over this hill, and I suddenly come upon this stone gate, and a huge, huge stone gate, but there was a part of it that had been knocked down, and it looked like something very big had hit it. So I just kind of took note of that, and as we walked through, it's a July summer evening, still, extremely still. I mean, there's no wind, no nothing. I mean, you could literally hear, you know, silence as a sound, and that was the sound I was hearing. And I'm following her through this graveyard, and I'm not one of those people, sir, that, you know, like, hey, let's go to the graveyard to have a good time. But at this point, I'm willing to try anything, you know, for the first time. So she takes me into the graveyard, and we're looking around, and I'm stopping. I'm kind of looking around, and I notice there's a full moon out. And the moon is so bright, it's almost hypnotic. And I'm looking at this moon, sir, and from out of nowhere, seven white birds just suddenly, I mean, it was almost like they kind of, like, collectively formed a little flying V. But what was so amazing was it was so quiet, I could actually hear their wings Russell, but it wasn't in a flittering moment. It was almost in like a harmonic moment, like they're all in such unity. And I'm sitting there going, I'm looking at the full moon. I'm looking at these seven brilliantly white birds in the darkest of dark of nights in Texas. And I'm thinking, this is really amazing, right? And suddenly from behind me, I hear her quoting some type of prophecy about the seven white birds and about the returning of the girl, the angel, home. And I'm getting like this chill, like you wouldn't believe. I'm looking at the moon, I'm looking at the birds, and she's doing this prophecy thing behind me. And it's all coming together. And at the moment she says, come home, I just turned around, and all I see is this whiff of smoke, almost like that look of like you, because I live in Alaska, and I remember, you know, when it's cold, you can see your breath. It was like that, sir, but it was 80 degrees, and it was like, it was almost cold as it hits my cheek, and I'm standing there in the middle of a graveyard in Denton, Texas, and she's gone, and I have, except for a whiff of smoke. So I'm screaming the name. I'm screaming for clarity in a graveyard in Texas in the middle of the night, trying to figure out what's going on. So I, after about a half an hour of looking around, there's a gas station right down the street. So I decided to amble my way down there, get some gas for the road trip home, and I must have looked shooken up because the guy goes, are you okay? I said, yeah, you won't believe what just happened. And I tell him the story, and he looks at me, he goes, son, you're the third one that's happened to me. He goes, I've been working the night shift now for 7 years. I says, let me tell you a little story about clarity. And I'm like, my knees are wobbling as I speak about this. He starts to tell about this, it was a prom night, I guess, back in sometime in the 70s, but a group of teenagers were driving in this apartment complex, had hit the hill, gone over the hill, and with this big old, like this pickup truck, had hit that stone gate that I noticed that had been knocked down, and wound up killing everyone in the truck, including the driver, a young lady who was graduating that night at the prom, named Clarity. Turns out, he's like going, well, you're not the first one that's returned Clarity home. So at this point, I'm thinking, but here's the part where Coast to Coast comes in hand. One ghostly night, I call in to Art Bell, and I tell him the ghost story of Clarity. And, sir, I'm standing in Grapevine, Texas, and it's another still Texas night. There's not a cloud in the sky. It's 2 a.m. I'm telling about Clarity to Art. And I hang it at the moment I tell the story and I say, go home. You guys clicked off. There was a burst of lightning that hits a transformer right across the street. In the burst of lightning, sir, at the moment your phone clicked off, that lightning hits the transformer, lights up my room brilliantly. I turn around and I see five people standing in my room. And I'm alone. So I'm like, and it was the most amazing thing was it was like five women of all various ages. It looked like a family, but it wasn't our time period. It was like sometimes like 100 years ago.
Okay.
They were standing there very calm, and the lightning, the light of the transformer is just for a moment. I see them clear as day. And, sir, I wasn't frightened. I wasn't scared. It was like acceptance because I'd seen them before. Just a week before that, I nearly got into a catastrophic accident as I'm driving the highways of Dallas-Fort Worth. And I remember these people running around my car, making sure my car was safe. And those very same people showed up that night when I hung up the phone with Coast to Coast. So you never know what can happen when you call Coast to Coast.
Very good. Well, then, and I'll be curious to see what happens. And as this multi-chaptered story of yours continues, this time next year, then, and we'll hear the update of what happened when you told the update of what happened on Ghost to Ghost AM. Judy is in Texas on Coast to Coast. Judy?
Yes.
Happy Halloween. And to you, too.
I'm going to try to go as quickly as possible. I know there are a lot of people excited to share their experiences.
Yes, there are.
I happen to have a construction company, and a lot of the houses that we work on are where people have passed away.
Right.
And watching these programs where you have the ghost hunters saying, okay, well, show us that you're here and make these noises or, you know, knock something around, you know, that's only half of the job of why these forces or why these spirits are showing themselves. They're asking for help to go to the other side, much like you hear the EVPs saying, help me. You know, they do. That's what they want, is some help. They need some guidance. Maybe they need, excuse the pun, maybe some clarity. But I, along with my construction crews, knowing that we've run into, you know, shadows, and actually we can feel the actual room or, you know, where somebody has passed away. We know how to get together to help the spirits go to the other side. So I think there's a lot more, as far as really being able to help people get closure to be able to go to the light so they can be with their loved ones. And the last situation, the man had passed away in a room. He was dead, I guess, 3 days before anybody even found him. And there was, a moisture imprint of his body in the wooden floor. And we could see his shadow going around the house, like he was looking at what we were doing to make sure that we were working on his house to make it nice. He apparently was a painter, so we went ahead and told him, more than welcome anytime, and when things started to get a little bit bizarre, where we realized that he was asking for help, then we, actually had helped him go to the other side.
How did you do that?
We all held hands around the where
spot
the,
in the floor.
Yes, at the portal, and where the person had passed, and we all got together. We had to do it in Spanish because this gentleman, was Hispanic, and we had actually seen him manifest outside the window, like he was looking in, and he really looked solid. It was just amazing. And we all got together and told him that he had all of his relatives on the other side waiting for him, and that he was a good person, and he didn't have to worry about the house, that it was going to be a beautiful house, and that it was time for him to move on to be with his people. And it was almost like, it feels like you could cut the air with the knife, when you have tension. It was just like all of a sudden this wind seemed to just gust through the house, and you could tell that it felt so positive, right after, we had prayed for him. So, I really appreciate being able to share that with people.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Well, I hope that Paul will keep that in mind, when he's doing his show, that there are spiritualists that will help actually finish the job instead of just, leaving in the middle of when the EVPs are saying, help me,
thank you, Judy. I appreciate that. And I think that there's something interesting, too, Joe, about people who are going into a ghost experience like Paul Kimball, she's referring to from Canadian television, who are just trying to see whether they can replicate the experience or rather have a similar experience happen to them. And I think that sometimes with the ghost adventurer types that go into these hauntings, I think that maybe sometimes they're trying to do too much, or maybe it gets confused as to exactly what it is they're doing. I think your point's a real good one. But I do think it's cool that Paul just went in with just kind of an open mind to see whether or not they could see the same things that other people have seen. That in itself is kind of science, right? Is whether or not you can have the same experience repeated. And then maybe after that, then you send in the people who will help these spirits move along. Scott is in Cape Cod on Ghost to Ghost. Scott.
Hello, Ian.
Hey.
Nice to talk to you.
Indeed.
About 13 or 14 years ago, my friend and I used to go around the Western New York State area checking out different paranormal sites for ourselves.
Right.
We were both what you would call, I guess, skeptics. And we basically never encountered anything at any of these sites. But we heard of there's a Holiday Inn in Grand Allen, New York.
And right.
It's the haunted room, room 422. So I called up there requesting that room. At first, they wouldn't give it to me. We kind of made up a fib. I hope they're not listening to this now, but we made up a little fib that we were starting a Haunted Getaways magazine. So they totally changed their tune. They're like, sure, we'll reserve that room for you.
I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations on fake magazines has run out, so you're okay. So don't worry.
Thank God. But yeah, so we went there. We were pretty much just in the room the whole time. Nothing happened, and my buddy went down pretty early. He was pretty tired, and I had just watching TV, and I started to get this horrible, horrible, almost like a tightening feeling in my chest, and started to get really cold in the room, and there was no, you know, the fan, no air conditioning was on at the time, and I just couldn't believe what was happening. I was like, oh, my God, and I'm looking around, and it felt like the room was closing in on me, and I'm not agoraphobic or, you know,
right,
or claustrophobic, anything like that, and just got progressively colder and colder and really started to freak me out. I woke my friend up, and he, you know, I thought he was joking around with him at first, and he started to feel the same thing. So we never really, you know, we never saw any ghostly visages or anything, but
right,
it freaked both of us out to the point where we kind of gave up for a while on that. So I don't know.
Freaked you out enough that you might actually want to start a real magazine about ghost stories. You might have thought about that.
Yeah,
exactly. Very interesting. Well, you know what? I spoke with somebody earlier in the week who had a similar experience. She told me that she was visiting a friend's house, and that this friend had warned her that there's a ghost in the house. And she had kind of laughed it off. She was 16, and her girlfriend lived in the basement. And she was down there kind of a sleepover. The next morning, her friend had even said to her, again, you know, hey, keep an eye out. There's a mischievous ghost around here. And that the ghost was of a 16-year-old boy who had died in the house, that he was not a mean-spirited ghost, but they had this presence, the sense of him all the time around. And so the woman who told me the story said that she's not particularly a believer in ghosts, although she said this happened to her, and she's been really trying to process it ever since, is that her friend had called down, I guess it was time for breakfast or something, and she was left alone in the basement, and she was fixing her hair, makeup in the mirror. And so she was concentrating on her own face as she looked in the mirror. And suddenly the distinct feeling, not a small feeling, but the distinct feeling of somebody tugging on the back of her hair so hard that it yanked her head back. So she's looking in the mirror. She sees her, she both sees and feels her head go jerked back, and she turned around, and there was nobody there. And she shot up those basement stairs. So, yes, sometimes those presences stay with us. And I hope that you stay with us, too. Lots of people on hold with their ghost-to-ghost stories. I know that as I look down the list here, we're representing not just all over the United States, but also up in Canada as well. If you missed the first hour, go back and catch it on Streamlink. It's worth it. And if you don't get through tonight, of course, you know, there are many of opportunities in the future. We'll try to get an open line for you. But if not, you know, we'll have other ghost guests coming up. I had to be careful on ghost guests coming up who will be talking about these stories, too. So good luck tonight, and just keep listening to Ghost AM. This is Ian Punnett. And we're going ghost to ghost for all of your stories. We'll get an open line for you coming up next on Ghost to Ghost AM. This is Ian Punnett. Let's pick it up with Ethan in Minneapolis. First time caller line on Ghost to Ghost. Ethan?
Me?
That, are you Ethan?
Yeah, that's me. I'm Ethan. Say, I've had a lot of weird experiences for way back from 18. I was 18, 25 or whatever years ago, all the way from paranormal experiences to extremely close encounter of a UFO. Anyways, a few years ago, I'm in a house that I owned, and the curtains in the front picture window aren't on, so the window's just bare glass. And I live in Minneapolis, you know, so I keep the door locked all the time. And I'm walking to the door, I open the door, I walk in. I didn't shut the door behind me, which is unusual, and I just went straight in the house toward the refrigerator. And my son's roommate was laying on the couch, and his eyes are adjusted, you know, to the lights and everything there from the street light outside. And he jumps up and heads toward me real quick and flips on the light. And at that time, I turned around when the light flipped on. It was like right by the refrigerator. And he had his shock in his face. I mean, you could just see it. His face was just like shock. And then he said that a girl followed me in, about 5'5", blonde hair, dimples on her cheeks, and a red blazer. And she sat at that chair, and he pointed at the chair, and as soon as I flipped the light on, she disappeared. But the weird thing is I've always had weird things happen in my life, but a couple of weeks prior to this, I always get these cold drafts in the house, and all of a sudden I smell perfume. Hmm. It's just me and my son and another guy living there, and I'd get these cold drafts, and I'd smell perfume. There's no woman in the house. And so I thought that was pretty weird.
Very interesting. And did you ever find out about the blonde girl with the dimples?
Well, no, but I never found out about that. The roommate I had was so uptight about it. He started packing a couple of days later and moved out. He says, I can't live in this house no more.
Very interesting. I appreciate that. Great stories. And keep them coming. Let's get back to west of the Rockies where Rob is in Washington on Coast to Coast. Rob?
Hey, Ian.
Hey.
Hey.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween to you, too. Well, I grew up in a town called Bellevue, Washington, not too far from Issaquah, where I live now. And Bellevue's just a little outside of Seattle, Washington. And years ago, back in the late 70s, early 80s, I was kind of in elementary school around the time. I remember my uncle, who was probably about 18 at the time, he lived with my mom and dad, and he came just crashing through the door one time at night. And when he was pounding on the door, he was just screaming for my mom to open up the door. My mom comes over, she opens up the door, and he comes in, and he was just white as a ghost. And I'll never forget that. It was just my wife, my mom, me, and my sister at home at the time. And he comes in, he's just like, Diane, which is my mom's name. And he's just like, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. And he comes inside and he sits down, and he starts relaying this story about what happened to him. And just to kind of give you a background of my uncle, he's not the kind of guy that makes up a story that would ever make him look like a wimp or scared in any sort of way. I mean, he was just kind of like an all-American athlete. And in fact, that night that this occurred, he had just gotten back from a wrestling meet. And I mean, he was like a state champion wrestler, football player, everything. And just not too much scares this guy. And what had happened was we lived along a long stretch of road in Bellevue called 148th. And there used to be this big gap where there was no street lights on this one lake, which is called Blueberry Lake. The lake was surrounded by blueberry bushes, and in the spring and summer, people would pick them, and that's why it's called Blueberry Lake.
Got it. Yeah.
And so he got dropped off after a wrestling match somewhere on the other side of that lake, and as he was walking home along 148th, he started walking through the area of the lake where it was really dark. There was no street lights, and the next street light was, you're looking at like 200 yards down, like about a good two football fields. And as he's walking, he's kind of walking at a normal pace. He says he begins to, feel or hear something pushing through the bushes just to the left of him, our blueberry bushes. Now, the blueberry bushes are about 6 feet high, and they're cropped off, and something was just pushing through the bushes, and it was kind of pacing him, as he recalled.
and he would stop, and he would look to his left and see what it was, and it would stop. And then he would begin proceed walking again, and then it would proceed walking. And right away he knew, obviously, whatever this was could see him, and it was intelligent enough to stop when he was stopping. And he wasn't quite too sure, you know, what it was. So he kind of picked up his pace, and sure enough, he could hear this thing picking up its pace as well, just kind of pushing through the blueberry bushes. And eventually, he picks his pace up a little bit more, and it can't push through the blueberry bushes as fast as he's walking by this time. So he hears it behind him exit the bushes and come onto the sidewalk where he is. Mm-hmm. And he says it sounded just like a human's bare foot falls on cement. It was just like a slapping sound, like your bare feet would sound on cement. And he could hear it like slapping, and it was just kind of like at a fast walk. And so he kind of picks up into a jog, and then this thing picks up into a jog. And he doesn't really know what to do at this time. His heart's pounding, so then he just blitzes as fast as he can, and he could run back then. I mean, he was an athlete.
Sure.
And this thing starts taking off after him as fast as he could, but because my uncle was so fast, I mean, he began to pull away from this thing. He could hear this thing getting further and further behind him. And then suddenly he heard it kind of skip and then skip. And then, as he says, he heard these huge thunderous wings just slapping the air, just like slapping. And then immediately he no longer heard footfalls. This thing had come off the ground, and he can actually hear not only the reverberation of the wing beats. I mean, he can actually hear it or feel it on his hair. And on his jacket from behind him, it was thumping so hard. Mm. And then as it began to fly, obviously it picked up speed and it stayed with him. And he was just running as hard as he could to the nearest light, which was like I said, a good 200 yards away. And he says, as it just began to get over above him, he says he got into the light of the first street light, and he says this thing screamed, and then it shot straight up, and like it didn't like the light, it kind of avoided the light. And then each street light was about, they're about 50 yards apart, about 50 yards apart, I would say. And so he kept running in between the street light. He would dive bomb him in between street lights, and then it would go back up out of the light. It just would not like the light. And our apartments wasn't too far beyond that, about a good another 100, 150 yards, but it was all uphill. He had to run uphill. And as he made the turn into our apartment buildings, there was a bunch of trees, a lot of pine trees right there, and it cut the corner, and he could hear it crash into the trees, and he just heard big, thick branches snapping, and he heard it scream, just kind of, and then we were just one... We were just the second apartment building in, and then we were on the second floor, and then he just came huffing up that floor and about tore the door down, pounding it, just screaming for my mom.
Well, as this winged creature was coming in between the lampposts, did he get any sort of look at what it was while you said it was dive bombing him?
No, that's the whole thing about it. It's like, you know, that's the kind of mystery about it. I guess it's easy for us to look back in Monday morning quarterback that after, but you know, I mean, I guess if I was in his shoes, and like he said, he goes, all I could think about was just running. I didn't have time to like turn my head. He was just running for his life, and it absolutely felt threatened by whatever this thing was. And so,
had anybody else reported this in the Blueberry Lake area? I mean, is this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Other people.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's the strange part about this was around this time, there was a lot of little kids had gone missing in the Bellevue area. And I'll never forget, the Bellevue Police Department used to come to our school almost weekly and talk to us kids about just not stopping anywhere, going straight home after school. Don't cut through the woods. Don't talk to strangers. A lot of kids began disappearing. There was also a lot of dogs and cats disappearing. Just a lot of strange things happening around that time. It was really bizarre. And what's funny is, there's years later, I'm talking 15, 20 years later, I, I ran into some really good friends of mine who used to live in Bellevue, and I rarely tell this story. And I actually, for whatever reason, I told that story to them, and they were like, "You got to be kidding, Rob." They go, "I got a story for you." And I was like, "Okay." And so they started telling me they actually live near Sammamish High School, which is not too far. It's only actually about a block from Blueberry Lake. They live near there. And Nancy and Daryl, it's a son and mother. And the son was telling me the story about he and his mom used to walk around the track, not too far from Blueberry Lake. He used to walk around the track at Sammamish High School. And he said he used to kick his soccer ball around while his mom would walk and get exercise. He says one time he goes, "Rob," he goes, I kicked the soccer ball and it went off the track into these large rhododendron bushes. In fact, those rhododendron bushes are still there. And he says, he goes, "I go down there to retrieve my ball. The ball had rolled underneath the rhododendron." This is broad daylight, Ian, broad daylight. But these rhododendrons, I know what he's talking about. These are extremely thick, thick bushes.
Right.
And so he goes down to retrieve his ball, and he kind of squats down. He could see his ball way down in about 4 or 5 feet. Tries to reach in, and then he grabs the ball and pulls it out. And then he notices what he thinks at the time is the dog. And he's thinking, "Oh, what's this dog doing in here? It's all kind of cowered up and, you know." And again, keep in mind, he's barely seeing this, but he thinks it's a dog. And he goes, hey, boy. And he starts kind of whistling at it, come here. And he's trying to get it to move, and it's not moving. He's thinking, that's strange. What's this dog doing? And so my buddy Daryl reached his arm inside the rhododendron bush all the way up to his neck. And he says, he goes, "I touched its fur," and it was like wet fur. And he goes, "When my finger penetrated through the hair," he goes, "I could feel the warmth of its body beneath it." And he goes, "Right at that moment," he goes, "I saw it was not a dog. It was like a humanoid looking face. And it was covered in like a dark gray hair. The face was gray." He said he could see a nose, everything. And then right when he poked it, he had ended up poking it right in the shoulder. And he said the eyes opened, and the eyes were just red. And then he said it kind of like smiled like a grimace, but not a smile, but I guess more of a grimace, kind of grimaced at him. And then he just like jumped up, screamed for his mom, and then took off running. And man, that was a pretty freaky story. And all that happened around the same time, and it was just kind of neat how we kind of ran into each other, and I just happened to tell him my story, and then he relayed my story, and I was just like, wow, there was something really, really strange around that time.
Well, I appreciate that, Rob. In fact, it's interesting is that they may or may not be connected stories. You know, and kind of what he describes there sounds a little bit more like sort of the classic dogman stories, like we've been hearing about mostly from the upper Midwest. Yours sound like something a little bit different, that which happened to your uncle. Sound a little bit more like the sort of the Thunderbird stories, right? Or the sort of giant ancient predators, which many people maintain these raptors are still with us. Or maybe it is some sort of other thing falling into the category of, you know, D, all of the above, shapeshifter, whatever. But that's what Ghost to Ghost is all about. And that's why Vicky's hanging on, too, with her story from Midland, Texas. Vicky? Yep, she's gone. I'm just getting to you, Vicky, and I'm sorry. It looks like you hung up just as we got there. Call back if you can. Tim is in San Diego. Tim, can we get you in before the top of the hour?
Sure. Happy Halloween, and happy Halloween to my dad, Jack, in Wyoming.
That's good. Happy Halloween, Dad.
All right. Well, let's see. I was given 3 months to live. I had diffuse cystic lymphoma, a rare kind of cancer. And all the people with my type had died. And when I had gotten it, and I think they'd seen 13 cases, so they pretty much didn't even know how to treat it. But they were going to give me my first treatment in Portland, Oregon. And my mom couldn't come with me, so my aunt drove me up there to get some more biopsy work done. And during the operation, I had died. And I remember seeing, like, kind of going to lights and stuff and then sort of flashing through some of my past. And then all of a sudden I remember kind of seeing my house and my room and stuff. And then my mom, and then, it kind of cut out and I didn't really think much of it.
And then my mom had been going to college, and she was in her finals, doing finals and stuff, so she couldn't come with me and take me to get my biopsy stuff, so my aunt took me. And she came home from school, and her boyfriend at the time, he went into the restroom downstairs, and so she needed to go, so she went upstairs, and she says that she had this letter, and she was reading it, and it was from my brother Brad. And she's reading the letter, and she said she sees me. Well, here's exactly what happened. I get home from the hospital, and I go to the front door and open it up, and I see my mom, and I say, and for some reason I'm like, Mom, did I get a letter from Brad? And she says, yeah, and she's looking like kind of weird. And so she goes and gets it, and I read it, and it's pretty touching and stuff. So the next day, she takes me to my nutritionist, and that's how I actually beat the cancer. I didn't do the traditional radiation and chemo. I did it through nutrition.
I'm glad whatever worked for you, I'm glad it worked for you.
Yeah, and prayer, you know, I talked to God and stuff and prayed, and so, but the nutrition really helped too. So anyway, so she brings me to my nutritionist, and then I guess she told her that I, you know, a story and that some stuff, weird stuff had been happening with me and everything. So they wanted me to draw pictures of what I'm thinking and what I'm seeing. I'm like, you guys are kooks. And so then we're on our way home, and it's like kind of storming and stuff. And she pulls over and she says, Timmy, I got to tell you, I'm really freaked out. And she's all, so you're like powerful or something. So, but on the way to our appointment, though, I see this car, and it looks like it's going to crash right into us. We're driving on the freeway, and I see this Ranchero. I look over, I'm looking at my mom, and I kind of see it out of the corner of my eye. It comes right around, like, in the fast lane, and we're, like, in the number two lane, and it cuts right in front of us and then goes off and just hits, like, an embankment that didn't look like a gnarly crash, but it almost took us out. So I told her, wow, that was crazy. And she says, what are you talking about? I said, that car crash. And she says, well, I didn't see what you're talking about. And does that mean that we got to go?
It means I we want to hear the end of the story.
Okay, so then my mom says, she pulls over and she says, Timmy, when you were in the hospital, you died. And, or did you, what, you know, what happened? She goes, when I came home, I saw, I went upstairs, I was reading the letter, and then you came and you talked to me, and I told you to go out and close the door, and I'll come back and I'll talk to you in a little bit when I'm done reading the letter from my brother, Brad. So then, what I saw the car crash.
Hang on, Tim. I'm going to ask you to, I wanted to get the whole story in before the top of the hour, but it sounds like you're going to need to organize that ending a little bit, and we'll come back for it. And we'll ask everybody to keep those stories focused, too, so we can get everybody in tonight on Ghost to Ghost. This is Ian Punnett.